Thanks.
The order breakfast at the McDonald's drive-thru. Tell yourself you'll wait to eat it at work, but it smells way too good. So you eat it right there in the McDonald's parking lot meal. There's a meal for every morning at McDonald's.
Right now, get any size iced coffee for 99 cents until 11 a.m. and pair it with your favorite breakfast sandwich or one of our tasty bakery treats. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the movie show. Mike Wendt and Eddie McCabe taking you another week of movie talk. You can follow us on social media at Mike Wendt, at the Eddie McCabe, hashtag that movie show. And be sure to hit like on the Facebook page, facebook.com/thatmovieshowtv, for no other reason that we would appreciate it.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Like the number,
I mean, say is, hi.
The number is like whatever number it's at. But if you click like, that number is higher.
Not to already derail the conversation, but let's do it for a second. I don't understand the difference between follow and like, because our follow numbers are in the 3,000s, but our like numbers are in the 1,000s. I don't get it. Like, what's the difference? Why does it matter? Why
can't they just to be
merge the two so we can have five?
Yeah, right? Double the likes, bro. Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea what the difference is.
Like, it's like one of those things when you're trying to talk to an advertiser and they ask about ratings. Like, well, potentially I reach 10 million people.
Yeah, right.
No, you don't. Yeah, that's just how many people are on Facebook, asshole.
Yeah, right. It's like, don't sit here and try and bullshit a bullshitter. All right, like,
potentially. Shut up.
Yeah. No. You're not reaching the 4,500,000 like dead profiles that are just locked out and
you
just
bottom. You bottom. Admit it.
Yeah. Right.
Liar. Tell us what you know. You fucking liar.
Yeah. You big phony. You're a big phony. But that's Christ. It.
How is week 97 of COVID for you, Eddie? I'm cracking up.
I feel like I'm in that new movie that I just watched, Vivarium.
What the fuck is that?
You should watch it because it's spooky. And it's this young couple who go to a house because they're like, oh, we're going to buy this house. But it's in one of those, like, you know, where all the houses kind of look the same developments, you know, like just
suburbs,
you know, you see suburbs, yeah. You know, suburbs.
Suburbs and or so Las Vegas.
They go to this house.
Okay.
And
okay,
then basically,
have you ever seen the suburbs of Las Vegas?
No.
It's just like, it's like a Tim Burton movie. Like, I think that's what you're trying to describe. Like, like the aerial shots of Edward Scissorhands where it's just, it's like a model fucking town.
Yes. 100%. That's exactly what it is. And so they go to see this house and then they leave and they can't leave the community. And then they finally get back to the house and basically there's just this baby that's like, there's just a baby that's there. And it's just like, hey, you have to raise this baby now. And they're just caught in a perpetual time loop.
Well, it sounds interesting. Where can I watch it?
I think I watched it on demand. Let me double check my handy dandy Just Watch app.
Ooh, you're still using that? You're not onto Real Good yet?
No.
Tell me about Real Good. Real Good is literally the same app, but it connects to your Roku. So you can use it as your Roku remote. And since my Roku remote broke. Oh, good. Then I have that. My Roku remote broke and I haven't replaced it yet. I have to use my phone as a remote, which is wonderful because my phone's battery is on its last leg. So watching that number go down as you're trying to fast forward the DVR, anxiety too. Electric Boogaloo. Okay, so it's on Amazon Prime. What's it called again?
Vivarium. And Vivarium. Jesse Eisenberg is in it.
Vibranium with Chris Evans?
Yeah, no, not Vibranium with Chris Evans. Vivarium.
Vivarium. All right.
So there's that. There's also, it also feels like that episode of Black Mirror where they are locked in the cabin. Have you ever seen that one?
Oh, yeah.
They're locked in the cabin. And then I think John Hamm's in that one.
Hamm.
And then he becomes a ghost person because he's a sex offender or something.
It's going to take a while for us to get to Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, but we will get there. Have you ever watched the show Toast of London?
No.
Okay, it's on Netflix, and IFC shows it a lot as well. So if you have a DVR, you can put it on that. Great British show. Matt Berry is the star and creator. Matt Berry is also in What We Do in the Shadows. He's the vampire that goes, bat!
Okay,
that sure. Guy. If you watch the show, you know it. But really funny, really, really funny show. He plays a voiceover actor in London that just, it's basically one of those I'll take any job for money type of thing, you know, like us.
Yeah,
and right. And really, 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 really funny. But there's one episode where John Hamm is in London doing a movie, and Matt Berry's character, Stephen Toast, is trying to get cast in it. And it's just this whole delusional fever dream love story with John Hamm. And every, like, I don't know, I think it might have been in the script, every 10 minutes, make sure Stephen yells, Hamm! That's I mean, it's the weirdest tick in the I've ever seen, but it just happens. And every time someone mentions John Hamm now, I have to, Hamm!
Yeah, okay.
It's going to be a weird ADD type of show today.
Sure.
I watched the Borat movie, Borat subsequent movie film.
So I've been waiting to talk to you about this because I knew that you watched, you went to like the digital premiere or yes. Whatever. We can talk about that in a second. But the big news out of that is all of the nonsense with Rudy Giuliani.
Yep.
So what the hell happened?
Both sides have a point and a case to it. So the narrative from the side that's against Rudy Giuliani and Trump, I'm going to go with first, because that was the first thing to come out when the images just leaked, not the
right.
movie.
So for people that have no idea what I'm talking about, basically over the last like week or so, the Borat film came out and everybody lost their mind because there's a footage of Rudy Giuliani who's interviewing with the actress that plays Borat's daughter. At the end of that interview, he basically lays on the bed, opens up his pants, and sticks his hand down his pants. So that's what the controversy is.
Yeah. So about the week before, as obviously promotion for the movie, just that one screenshot of Rudy laying on the bed with this female in a tight blue dress standing in front of him and his hand down his pants. And it was described as such. Rudy Giuliani is sexually inappropriate with the actress playing Borat's 15-year-old daughter in the movie, basically right. trying to establish that he was doing this with a known 15-year-old. Okay.
Right.
A lot of that is true, except for the part, and this is where it gets muddied in headlines type of thing.
Right.
You know, context and reading the article is important. Or just watching the movie and making your own opinions. Every part of that is true except the fact that he knew she was 15.
Right.
I watched it, like I said, and that was the big climax, obviously, of the movie. If you have something like that, you're going to make it the lead up, you know, the big wahoo, the weenie in the room, if you will. He's sitting down and she is portraying not only Borat's daughter, who's 15, but then she becomes a television reporter, which I believe in the context of the movie, I think she actually was, or they set up where she's like working for some kind of news station. I didn't Google too much into it. Anyway, she gets an interview with Rudy Giuliani. And in the interview, she is actively flirting with him.
Right.
Like really fucking hard.
Yeah.
And mind you, they set up the interview. It wasn't like they went to Rudy Giuliani's hotel room. He came to their hospitality suite.
Right.
So their hospitality suite, which, again, for those of you that aren't in media, is not an uncommon thing.
Sure.
If you're doing press, I've done it when I used to work in radio stations, and we would have, you know, the celebrities would come through to do media junkets for movies. It's a common thing. And it's in a hospitality suite. That doesn't mean the actor is staying there, but it is a hotel room that also has a living room type area.
Right. So you're able to set up a little interview space inside this hotel room.
Right. Well, there's also in it being a hotel room, because they're usually long days, you can go, you can, you know, eat in the room, you can shower, all that stuff, all the hotel amenities.
Right.
Okay. So Borat's people set that up. So this right. was Rudy Giuliani going to them as opposed to them going to him. And like I said, during the interview, the actress is flirting really fucking hard. And throughout, there was some things that got lost because of the end result, which was him putting his hand down his pants. But stuff like him saying that the Chinese manufactured COVID as like a weapon, stuff like that was in the interview. Again, I'm not quoting word for word, so please go watch it. It's on Amazon Prime. Make up your own mind. I'm not trying to influence fucking anybody, Christ, in this climate. But ultimately, the point was there to try to get... Oh, here's my boys.
That was the junior. That was definitely a moped.
Okay. That's a heavy moped. Yeah. But the point was very clear. She was flirting with him to try to get some kind of sexual encounter to happen.
Yeah.
So they adjourned to the bedroom area with drinks.
Yeah.
And she takes off Rudy's microphone. She goes in that route. So she's, you know, again, flirting very hard, a little bit of the touching and stuff like that. Again, sure. He gives her a pat on the ass. Now, I don't know if Rudy's married or not, but the way he was acting was inappropriate.
At one point, he was married to his cousin, but go on.
All right. But nevertheless, I'm just going to go with what I saw. So she, you know, undid a couple of buttons of his shirt, untucked it. We've all worn wire microphones yes. before. It goes underneath your shirt, so you have to snake the wire up your shirt. So she kind of went that approach and pulled the microphone wire down and out the front. While she's doing it, again, he's kind of giving her one on the tush. And then she goes to put the microphone on the dresser, and he does lay down, and he undid his pants and starts throwing his hand down his pants. Now, his claim is he was tucking his shirt in.
Yeah.
I've never tucked my shirt in like that. I don't know about you if you've ever No. laid down on a bed. Again, to each their own. But it didn't look like... When I watched the movie, it right. didn't look like he was reaching for his shirt.
Right.
It looked like he was warming himself up. We've well, all been there. And
this is the other thing. You know, as entertainment professionals, right? Now, to be fair, I have not seen the whole... I haven't seen the whole thing. I've just seen stills sure. and, like, clips, right? But I've mic'd countless people. And at no point has anybody ever had that type of response to being microphoned. Like, it's just that's not a valid excuse, especially from somebody who's been mic'd countless times this century. You know what I mean? Like, how many interviews did he do in 2001? For Christ's sake. You know what right. I mean? Like, the guy's done. Like, you can't claim that he didn't know what he was doing. And then the tough part is that it's like, yeah, man. You definitely were trying something. Yeah, whether she sure. was approving or not, you were trying something.
Yeah, and it goes again. It's there's because of how it wraps up, which is basically Borat crashing through the room and stopping it, yelling, "She's 15," which was that was the moment that it was revealed she was 15. By the way, because the narrative up to this point. And every story I saw up until this point was that it was implied he knew she was 15. But that yeah. was the first instant right at the very end, right before he ran out yeah. of the room, that she was 15. So again, narratives and all that stuff. It's just
right. Here's the thing, and this is the way I look at it, is like the woman is not 15.
No.
The woman that plays his daughter is not 15. Correct. Right? So we can't retroactively like vilify
Make it
Rudy.
Any less creepy.
Right. No.
It just doesn't well, here's make the... it pedophile-y.
Right. It's just like, look, here's the deal. Like, it's not expressed that she's necessarily 15. She's a news reporter. He's assuming age is appropriate. Right. Right. That's what I'm going to have to. That's yeah, what
and,
I'm going to
have was, to. It was. Build it looked anyway, and it was looking like as if she was a professional news reporter for a real. It right. wasn't like you know, here's my daughter on a field trip to do news right. reporting for her YouTube channel. It was like, no, this is a real camera crew with a you know right. adults uh-huh. everywhere.
It's as professional could be in theory, yeah. you know. But I will say, hey, man, that's not a good look for a man of power and influence to just make those assumptions that he's going to get laid.
Well, that's the thing. It was like that. That was why when I watched it, it was kind of annoying that the pre-news stories was more about her being 15, because it's almost like once you see it, that's all people wanted to talk about. Like, see, he had no idea she wasn't 15 or whatever. And it's like, well, that's not really the point here. He still smacked her on the ass in the bedroom.
Right. He's still basically using his influence to try and over.
And again, not to play sides, she was flirting extremely hard with him too.
Right. Yes.
You know what I mean? It's
really tough. It's really tough because they got exactly what they wanted.
Right.
Right. Like they got exactly what they wanted, which is this gotcha moment.
It doesn't make Rudy Giuliani any better of a person, the fact that the Borat people manufactured this moment, because the right thing to do would have been to not react to that and to not put your hand down your pants, give her one on the tush, go to the bedroom with cocktails. You know, the right thing to do was when the interview was clearly fucking over.
Right.
You leave. Go.
You leave. You bounce, bro.
You know? So that's that. And all together, there was funny moments. I will admit there was funny moments, especially if you like Borat stuff. I like the first movie. There were funny moments. It definitely hurt that Borat, the original movie, was literally one of the biggest movies ever because he couldn't Borat anymore.
Right. It even hurt Bruno.
Yeah. Well, Bruno got killed because of it. I think we talked about the Sarah Palin thing that he did with his Showtime show, where, you know, I think it was a learning thing with Bruno that I can't really show. Sacha Baron Cohen can't show his face. That's why in the Showtime thing, he was fully prostheticed up when he did all those characters. And now with Borat, it's like, okay, well, it's a Borat movie. You got to be Borat.
Right.
And immediately, and I like that they made reference to it, because immediately when they get to America, it's people running up taking selfies with them. And it's like, oh, what do I do now? I'm way too famous to do this, which turned the movie, and I know we talked about this when we did some Action Point talk and stuff like that. It became very much like Bad Grandpa that Johnny Knoxville did.
Sure.
Where because you go into the Johnny Knoxville movie wanting Jackass stuff, but because he's so goddamn famous, it's like you can only do limited amounts. Same thing with Borat, because Borat is such a known character and Sacha Baron Cohen is such a famous actor, he can't Borat too much, so they have to make a movie out of it. So there's a lot of scripted filler between him and the daughter, which is nice. It's nice. I'm not, you know, it's not like it's not something I would be like, if it wasn't a Borat movie, I wouldn't recommend it, because it was just that stuff was just okay as a movie. But once you get to the Borating, it's funny. You know, if you like Borat. So I guess that's a long way to get around. Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. You probably subscribe. Give it a watch. It's a quick film.
Right. I wasn't in on the first Borat movie. Just not really my jam. Plus, everybody got really annoying with the unnats, like all that bullshit. So I was definitely spitefully not watching that movie at some points. So watching Borat 2 was not necessarily, my jam. That being said, loved the Ali G show, and I really like Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah,
so I think it's just particularly that character.
But you have Amazon Prime, so eventually you'll probably get around to it.
Because eventually I'm going to watch everything on the internet.
First Borat's available on Amazon Prime now, too. So there you go. Yeah. A Borat double feature.
Oh, man, I watched in something completely different. I watched the new Olaf short on Disney Plus.
Oh.
So there. Did you ever watch the, like, Doug's Secret Mission, the dog from Up? So you should watch that, too. But Doug's Secret Mission from Up is all about – you saw Up, though, right?
Yes.
So it's all about what Doug is doing leading up to him meeting Carl and the boy. I can't remember his name. Not important. But that's what the short is, so that it dovetails into the movie, you know, very, very nicely. And so this new Olaf short does that exact same thing, but with Olaf in the first Frozen movie.
So it's an Olaf origin story.
Yeah, it literally starts.
Because everything has to be labeled now.
Yeah, it starts with Elsa in the middle of singing Let It Go, and she makes Olaf. Olaf comes to life, and then it's him all the way up to meeting our fun friends Anna and Kristoff.
Oh, very nice. Okay, I'll give that a watch on Disney Plus, obviously.
Yeah. So I've been watching that along with the Animal Kingdom show, which I talked about last week.
I have to start that. It definitely piqued my interest with that one. Natural Geographic did that, right?
Yeah.
I got sucked into a YouTube rabbit hole of the old Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn show.
Sure.
That's always fun. What did I watch? Oh, Connecting on, I believe, NBC. So far, they only have 3 episodes in. I think their 4th one is later in the week. But it's basically a like quarantine pandemic-based sitcom.
Okay.
So it's all basically done through Zoom, but not Zoom because copyright, obviously. It's really well done. And it's not just like, I call it a sitcom because that's how they label it as a sitcom, but they also handle like the real issues that a lot of us are going through, stuff like job loss, depression, relationships, breakups. And then, you know, they wrapped up the 3rd episode with some really serious cliffhanger type topics. Black Lives Matter is the George Floyd thing happened at the end of the 3rd episode. Literally, they ended it with the characters because they're all on Zoom. So everybody has their phones and they end it not showing, but showing their reaction to watching the video. And it was, again, really well done for a comedy, especially something that's billed as kind of a fun, light, goofy comedy. They handle the serious stuff really well.
It's bananas that the George Floyd stuff happened this year.
It feels like forever ago, doesn't it?
It feels like forever ago. And it's funny because it ties into the 30-day movie challenge.
It absolutely does. Mine anyway. Because
again, we're on day 13.
14.
Day 14, which means we're on week 14 of doing this, right?
Again, it feels like we started this a year ago.
It feels like we started this a year ago. And that was 14 weeks ago is like when we started doing this. And then it was at least 30 days before that. And yours ties into...
Believe me, my ADD doesn't work in segues, so I did not try to put that together. But let's get into the 30-day film challenge. Yeah. Definitely check out Connecting, by the way. Put it on your DVR. It's probably on demand and shit like that. What do you have before I go?
Let's
talk about it. So day 14 is a film that gave you depression.
Yeah, a film that gave... Yeah. I kind of took this in a different way because, like... I can't think of a film that actually was just like, I'm so sad that I can't function, right? You know, like we've all, especially in 2020, have dealt with a lot of real emotion that, you know, that would be actually categorized as depression. So entertainment that makes me sad didn't necessarily like fit the bill on this one. So instead, I went with the type of idea of like, oh, I really wanted this movie to be good. And it just wasn't. Oh, that's so depressing that it was not good, right? Okay. Like, I went like that route.
Okay.
And I did The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. With Sean Connery.
Yeah. I think that's the movie that caused him to retire.
It is. Because...
Which is depressing in its own right.
Right. There's a lot of it, right?
I mean, we could have gone with Welcome to Mooseport, which basically broke Gene Hackman. He's like, fuck movies, I'm done. this is terrible.
Yeah, he did. So, and there was like something else too, where like they wanted Sean Connery for a role in Lord of the Rings, and he was like, no, I don't want to do Lord of the Rings.
Because it's too similar to comic book movies, basically.
Right. Which
is what that is.
Right. And well, that's exactly what happened is like he said no to Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings came out, became this mega hit movie.
That way, yeah.
And then all of a sudden he was just like, well, I guess I got to do something. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen came out. And so he was just like, all right, fine. And then that movie was garbage.
Okay. So League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I know it's a comic book movie. What is it based on?
So it's based on like a shared universe of like folk novels, basically. Okay. Like this feels like something Disney would make because I feel like they've made it all of these properties at some point, but it was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Tom Sawyer, the Captain Nemo, they're on the Nautilus for like a bunch of it. It's like a bunch of Jules Verne stuff. And you basically they tried to do the Avengers because you know, there's like somebody that kind of fits into all of those different things. Cause like Tom Sawyer obviously isn't a child, but he's like he's a CIA like agent.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, or like a US Marshal or something. And so it's like, yeah, it's just bad. And they have to all get together and stop something. I forget. But it was just like, the first time I watched it, it was me and my dad.
Yep.
We watched it together because this was back in the days when Blockbuster – actually, no, I'll save that tidbit for something else. But we basically rented it from Blockbuster. We're like, yeah, it's going to be – it was just me and him. I think my sister and my mom were just out or whatever. So it was just going to be like a guy's night in.
Let's do some action movies.
Yeah, we're going to do League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yeah, we were all excited about it. We watched it. We both fell asleep in the first 10 minutes and then woke up right as the credits were rolling and simultaneously asked each other what happened. And we were like, I fell asleep. Do you want to start it over? No. Nope. And so then subsequently, I have tried to watch it again. Uh-huh. And I just get to different parts of the movie and I'm like, this movie sucks. And I just turn it off.
That's terrible. Who else was in that? Let's do a very quick League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Since
we'll probably end up watching that piece of shit on this fucking show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's right up our alley. League.
All right. So League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, it's got a 17% on Rotten Tomatoes, 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb, and a 30% on Metacritic.
Cast. Look at this cast.
Yeah.
Peta Wilson. Remember she was a thing?
Yeah.
Shane West.
Shane West.
God, this is such an early 2000s cast. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Tommy Invisible Man, a scientist, a spy, a hunter, a vampire, a beast, an immortal. So it feels like it's appropriate for today. It feels almost universal monstery.
Sort of. And again, it's like it's tough because I don't know exactly what to call them because like it wasn't like they were all made by the same person, but they fit into that like Jules Verne sort of like steampunk future kind of way. You know, I think it's mostly Captain Nemo.
I'm not going to read this whole review on IMDb, but there's just a line in it that starts out with, I understand League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is not Schindler's List, but.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
It's like from the line from Harold and Kumar.
Yeah.
When they're talking about the gift and Katie Holmes' nude scene. And they fucking pull over and it's the kid from American Pie and the other guy and Harold and Kumar. And they're like oh, did you see the gift? She's like, yeah. Katie Holmes' titties. He's like, nice. He's like, you know the Holocaust? Yeah. The opposite. <It's>
like, what? Oh, that's so funny.
That line never gets me to not laugh. It's wonderful.
There's a bit in Abbott and Costello that never stop. I always
titties?
Yeah, they definitely talk about titties. They definitely talk about titties in Abbott and Costello, you know, a movie from the 40s. But there's a bit in Abbott and Costello that I laugh so hard And I definitely shouldn't laugh as hard because it's not that funny, but it just hits me in such a way that I love it.
Okay. Are we going to talk about it? Is it in this movie?
Yes, it's in this movie.
Oh, okay, perfect. I was like, are you going to leave us hanging for like months when we get back to this? Okay. So mine, for day 14 of depression, it was one of those things that it fell on a day that I was able to conveniently skip it for like a really, yeah. I don't know, bad reason, I guess. It fell on, I don't know if a lot of you remember, because it was, you know, June, so many years ago. It was right after the protests and stuff for Black Lives Matter started. There was this social media movement that was Blackout Tuesday. So it fell on June 2nd. And I partook in it where you black out your entire social media, your profile pictures, all that stuff on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, and basically you do nothing. One of the popular hashtags for those of us in media was the show must be paused, because obviously the common phrase is the show must go on. Well, because of this, the show must be paused. At the time I was doing, the Wicked Bites live Facebooks every night. And I took that off. I was like, I just can't. Like, I mulled. It was one of those weird days where I'm like, really had to think socially consciously that and I say it's weird because I normally don't. Like, I'm one of those people that don't really get involved in that type of stuff. But it hit me in a way when I woke up on that Tuesday morning, and I was just like, and I remember sending Scott the text about the Facebook thing. I'm like, I have to just kind of take this day off. I feel it. Like, I'm like, I don't know why, but I know it's the right thing to do. Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't have enough information. And definitely am the wrong person to speak about social activity and stuff like that, or this type of cause. But I just feel like it's the right thing to do, and not because it's following a trend. It hit me in a way emotionally that I'm like, I really need to just pump the brakes, and I don't need to share any pictures of food or movies or anything. It's just like there's shit in the world happening that's bigger than me, so I need to not make today about me type of day, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Right. And look, I mean, this show in particular isn't, you know, the hardest of schedules. But I do remember that week we ended up not doing anything. Like, we were set to record on that day.
To record on Tuesday, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I had three things. I had this show. I had the nightly show on the Wicked Bites Facebook page. And at the time, I was doing Bites with Mike, which was my Tuesday and Thursday watch-along of Wicked Bites as well on the Facebook page. And they all just happened to fall on Tuesday. And I don't think I even knew it was coming up. It's like I woke up and saw that it was happening, and it just hit me in a way. I'm like, yeah, there is bigger shit in the world than me and, you know, and this pandemic and stuff. It's like there's real life problems that I'm not dealing with. So it's like, I need to not make today about me. Like, I felt like it would be inappropriate for me to be like, hey, let's talk about a goofy movie, or hey, let's go and watch me eat TV. Hey, let's, you know, like it was one of those. And I rarely have those moments. Call it selfish, call it what you will. I rarely have those like moments where I'm like not making it about me, I guess. sounds horrible in context, but it is what it is. It hit me pretty hard that morning when I read about it. And I sat and I had my cup of coffee and I was like, and I remember I sat and watched, I forget what movie we were doing that week, but I actually watched the movie that we were going to record just in case I changed my mind. But I remember not being able to pay attention during the movie. And I sent Scott the text in the middle of the movie, and I think I sent you a text right after. And I was like, I just can't do anything today. And it's like,
also like, contextually, it would have been terrible to do it because we were still in action movie quarantine at that point. And so whatever movie we were doing was definitely going to be like some pro-cop, pro-military, you know what I mean? Where like that's where, and like, oh, you know what? It would be incredibly tone deaf is if we like did Lethal Weapon and like You know what I mean? Like, I can't remember what movie we were supposed
I'm
to
looking,
do that.
I'm trying to look it up right now.
But you know what I mean? Like, how incredibly tone deaf would that have been for us on Tuesday to release a movie review being like, oh, yeah, that cop movie, RoboCop, was so great. You know, like.
You know what it was?
What?
Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah. So there, there it
is. I could have gone either way. But I mean, still, God, I had a beard back then. Look at that thing. Beautiful. And a big, full beard.
Hey, you had to shave Yeti.
Yeah, did you see that commercial?
Yeah, it was good.
Not to get sidetracked, but that was awesome. They finally released the commercial that I filmed back in June. It was fun. I loved it. I loved how it came out. It was really neat. And I love the response. Everybody seems to enjoy it. It's on my Facebook page, so if you want to take a look at it. So while I was sitting debating what my feelings on the day were, I was trying to also figure out what the fuck to do for this day of depression in my movie challenge that I was going to deal with.
Right.
There was two that I had in mind that do show up actually later on my list anyway. And one was going to be a cheat, and I was going to substitute depression for anxiety. But then I looked ahead, and I'm like, "Oh no, I can slot that in there." And right. Then the other one, it's one of those movies that sometimes hits me in a positive way, but sometimes really sends me into a dark hole for some fucked up reason, and I can't explain it. That's depression and mental illness that we deal with, and that also shows up later in the movie. It's actually the second to last one. And neither one of those are the Serbian film, which will show up also on my list at some point. So we get to talk about
that. Yeah, I can't remember exactly what day it was because I was definitely further along in this challenge than you were. Yeah. And so I remember for this particular thing. And again, I can't remember what day it was, is that I skipped that day. Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, and again, not to get, you know, too into the political stuff, but again, as a very, very white guy, I didn't feel that it was right to post anything. So I did do the social media blackout on that day. The only thing was, is that I also hate virtue signaling. Like, one of my biggest pet peeves on social media is virtue signaling. And that's what I saw with that in particular. If it's your thing, whatever, if you want to
explain
you
felt what
like,
you mean. So
the idea of me, a white guy, posting a black square on all of my social media doesn't do anything. There's nothing.
I agree 100% with that statement.
Basically, what I'm doing by doing that is, at least this is, again, this is my interpretation. If you don't feel the same way, that's perfectly fine. But I feel that if I take the time to post a black square on all of my social media, then I'm just showing you that I care about something. I'm not actually doing anything. Mm-hmm. And so my, you know, I handled that day was not posting anything. If I did, it was information that led to like hotlines of like, you know, helping people or like resources or something like that. Because that to me is helpful as opposed to just like, look at me, I'm doing a thing. It's like when, you know, France a few years ago. Something happened to France. It was either a terrorist attack or somebody didn't agree with their election or something. I don't know. They're French. But the flag thing is that
I think it was a shooting. I want to say
a shooting maybe.
But here's the thing. We can't even remember what the thing was.
Right.
That's the point of this. Like everyone partook in this flag thing, but we can't remember what actually caused it. I think it was a shooting, but it might have been something else. Yeah. I'm not 100%. I agree. I feel the same exact way. And I think my reasoning, because I did do the black square thing, was because I do the same. I'm like, it's not going to, me doing that is, it almost feels worse.
Right.
Because it's not going to change that. But I think on that day, and it, again, a lot of this probably has to do with being in quarantine for a couple months at that point, COVID. You know, just I think it was my the world was fucking on fire at that point. Literally, yes. In every sense of the word. We had just watched, I mean, the Boston protests slash riots had just happened. Right. And I mean, I fucking sat here in this same room watching it live till about 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was like, I think it was just so much confusion is the best word for it. Like, I didn't, like I said earlier, I didn't know what the right thing to do was. So I knew that definitely going on and trying to have fun wasn't the right move for at least one fucking day. Like, yeah, it's not going to change the world. I know that. It's not even going to change a little bit, me not doing anything. Like, who the fuck am I? You know what I mean? believe me, people, despite how we come off, we don't actually believe we're that great.
It's true.
Realism does exist in the back of my head somewhere. But it's like, I don't know. It's because I would never take part in that type of stuff.
Right.
But I think it hit me so fucking hard for whatever reason. Like, I can't even explain the reason because it's in my head. You know what I mean? It's not like a conscious thought. It's just there was something in the back of my head telling me that's the right thing to do right now. I can't explain why, but that's the right thing to do right now. You know, one of the many voices yelling at me on the day. So that's what I did for a day.
Yeah. And then I just posted two the next day. That's what I did. The other thing though, that is kind of fitting to that, which I did absolutely love, was, after one of the debates, there was like Proud Boy is like a hashtag for like white supremacists on social media. So all of the entire gay community got together and just posted raunchy pictures of just dudes and just tagged Proud Boys. So, you know, here's the thing. Sometimes posting nonsense on the internet definitely does help.
Sometimes we need a little hashtag hijacking. Good for them. I love that. All right.
Let's get to Abbott and Costello.
Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein.
Count Dracula sleeps in this coffin, but rises every night at sunset. Chick is right. This is awful silly stuff.
Come on, take it all out.
The nation's top comics, Abbott and Costello. Petrified, but hilariously. Plus the dangerous and terrifying Wolfman, played by Lon Chaney. Plus that fiend out of a nightmare, the vampire Batman, Count Dracula, played by Bela Lugosi. Plus the most dreaded creature of them all, the Frankenstein monster, played by Glenn Strange. Plus a couple of luscious but designing females in the spookiest laugh fest on record.
Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein was released June 15th, 1948. Had a budget of $792,270, which at the time was the second lowest costing movie Universal made.
Okay.
Had a box office of $3.2 million, which was the second highest grossing film for the year for Universal.
Jeez.
Not bad. It, of course, stars Bud Abbott, Lou Costello, also Lon Chaney Jr., Bela Lugosi, and Glenn Strange. That was one of the things we will talk much about, but I was actually very pleasantly surprised to see that it was, you know, the Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney in them. Because I've seen these movies, I've seen these covers, I haven't actually watched them until today. And I didn't know it was the real guys. I didn't know it was Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney in these movies. I thought it was, you know, just vampire, Frankenstein.
Yeah. Oh, it's Dracula. No, it's because this is a Universal movie. Yeah. They were able to use the Universal monster movies in a very Scooby-Doo meets, you know, kind of way.
They were. It's interesting, though, because the actors, there's a little bit of controversy in the actors' choosing. Excuse me. Directed by Charles Barton, who was a frequent collaborator and good friend of Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. It was written by Robert Lees, Frederick Rinaldo, and John Grant. There's a good easy writer's name, John Grant. Just all those fucking vowels, Rinaldo. Anywho, this was a hoot and a holler, and it was the best. Look, let me put it this way. This is the first time I used Peacock.
Yep.
I have problems with it.
Sure.
And maybe it's just because I haven't set it up correctly. I have it on Xfinity, so I was using it through the X1 box.
Okay.
But there's ads on Peacock. It says Peacock Premium.
Yeah, so
fucking ads?
Yeah, so there's three levels of Peacock. Peacock free. Yeah. Peacock free. Peacock Premium. And then there's a Peacock Premium without ads.
They kind of shot their wad by naming the middle one Premium, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did. So basically, the free is a bunch of titles, but to a point. Okay. And then Premium is all of the content.
Yep.
And then I think it's Premium Plus is Premium without ads.
So it's basically the Hulu model.
It's the Hulu model. Well, Hulu was NBC's streaming service for a while.
Oh. So when they sold off to Disney.
It was before that.
Yeah, I was going to say because it was Fox that owned them. So
yeah,
I don't know. Contracts, money.
But that was the original Hulu model. The original Hulu model was like, oh, Hulu's free, but like it might only have one season of this television show. But if you get Hulu Premium and you actually pay for it, you get the rest of them.
I remember when I was doing overnights and Hulu was free, I would binge watch ALF. It was wonderful.
Right.
I didn't watch Hulu for a while, and I went back because I'm like, I'm going to watch Elf. It's on Hulu for free. And all of a sudden, Hulu isn't offered for free anymore. I'm like, fuck Hulu. Now right. I have it because Disney.
Because it's Disney Plus. Right. But yeah, so it was it's annoying. The good thing is that it was only like one commercial. So it was
had many.
Mine was tolerable.
And I knew it right from the start because. I paused it because, of course, social media being what it is, I took a picture of the title card when it came up. Right. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And when I hit pause, the timeline came up
and there was a bunch
of yellow dots across.
Yeah.
It.
So when I say that, I mean like each commercial break was only like one commercial.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It was tolerable.
I know exactly what Target is selling.
Yeah. But it was like I've been watching something on Animal Planet, the app on Animal Planet.
All right.
And when they go to commercial break, it's like six or eight commercials. And
what I did like about, I mean, if you have to sit through a commercial break, at the very least, I like that they had the countdown timer. So you know exactly how long, which I like even better than if like on Hulu, they'll just put like one of four,
X-ads.
Two of four, you know. I like the fact that if there was two commercials, it started with 120 seconds and just went down. I'm like, okay, at least I know, you know,
how much time I got.
Yeah, it's the little shits. Doesn't make it, you know, any better. Also, they put them sometimes in weird spots, like in the middle of a sentence.
Yeah.
Like, how long have you
been
known Wilbur? It's like, God damn, man. Or worst was like, one of them cut in the middle of a transition. There was like it was a dissolved transition, so it was like, I'm like, oh. Ugh. Luckily, they didn't do it while the Wolfman was transitioning. But
yeah, right.
That's interesting. Again, I have to keep reminding myself it was 1948.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's like, an old. Don't beat up the effects too bad, because wow, Dracula turning into a bat was all the cartoon.
Oh yeah, the bat flying through the window in the castle. That?
Oh, God. The funny thing was, upon my research, the guy who created that bat animation was the guy who created and drew Woody Woodpecker. He was just one of Universal's artists at the time, because that's how it worked back then. They had a stable of people who never left the basement. They just drew for years on end.
Yes. I absolutely love this movie. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. I got this movie because back when Blockbuster, right when they laughed Netflix out of the building.
This is my Blockbuster story.
This is my Blockbuster story. See, I teased it and now we're telling it. And so what ended up happening was you look at like Netflix came out, they had the DVD subscription model and it started really eating into the Blockbuster business. So Blockbuster in its dying days tried to compete by offering a subscription service of their own, right? You would pay $20 and you could just come back to Blockbuster and just swap out movies. And that's all
Which
it was.
Is literally rental.
Yeah. But it was, you know, as opposed to like $3 a movie. But anyway, not the point.
I mean, I can also speak just from someone who was running a video store when DVDs came about. That was very hard for video stores to wrap their head around, but also to invest in. I remember it basically. So I ran four Hollywood Videos between the years of 97 to 01.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm having this conversation a lot lately, which means something about a video store is going to happen in my life, I think, if you believe in that shit. So, around 98, I think, must have been around 98, 99, is when DVDs were starting out. It was still, here's how far back that was. There was still a thing called HD DVDs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When DVDs were starting, I started reaching out to, you know, to corporate, to Hollywood Video, and I'm like, are we going to get a DVD section? They're like, no, we're not really not investing in that yet. And basically, this was a point in the video rental business where DVDs were still looked at as a fad.
Yes.
And as someone who had invested much money and time into Laserdisc, like we talked about last week, I agreed.
Yeah,
I was on the fence like, fuck that. I don't want to invest in another thing. I like my Laserdisc. I like flipping a movie every 15 minutes like an old record.
Yeah.
I don't. It's what I was telling myself. So I can sleep at night. But anyway, it got to a point that enough people were coming in into the store and requesting DVDs. And I'm like, oh, man. We haven't got them. We haven't got them yet. You know, talking to the company, blah, 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 blah. So long story long, I just kind of went out on my own and made a DVD. I basically went around corporate to the distributor and got a whole shitload of DVDs sent to my store and made a section, and they were renting great. And then this was, again, before the internet or anything like that. So there wasn't a lot of like, it wasn't like a guy, because our corporate office was like in Utah, I think. And it's not like they could just log in and see what the fuck we were doing.
Yeah,
like
right. That, you were on your own.
So about 2 months in, they did their, you know, their quarterly corporate visit to all the stores. So they came out east, and they stopped in the store, and they're walking around, and I'm walking with them, and I have all the, you know, all my charts. I was actually a responsible human being back then with fucking charts and stuff and graphs and shit.
Responsibility.
I was a fucking district manager, for Christ's sakes. Now look at me. Fuck. And then we get to the section and they're like, what the hell is all this? I go, oh, this is our DVD section. And they go, we don't have a DVD section in Hollywood Video. I go, well, here's how they're doing. And I started showing them the numbers. It was one of those beg for forgiveness instead of ask for permission type of moments.
Yeah, right.
So they're like, they went off and talked by themselves for a little bit. They came back like, all right, you have to take all this down. This is not corporate approved, et cetera, et cetera. Take this down. Also take down that G.I. Jane poster. You can see Demi Moore's nipple. Take it down. those are my two notes from that visit. I remember specifically. So I do. I box everything up, put it out back. And about 2 weeks later, we got official Hollywood Video DVD section. So I'm, till this day, take credit for basically introducing Hollywood Video to DVDs, because I showed them the numbers. They were selling, they were renting.
Yeah,
and it took that it took me breaking those rules to have something happen for that company, which, you know, I've done to a fault through the rest of my career.
Sure.
Which is why I've had so many jobs in radio instead of one.
Right. But, sounds about right.
Sorry, I derailed your story. Blockbuster Video.
Oh, well, that was a delightful anecdote. Mine was just like, I lived behind a Blockbuster Video, so I took so much advantage of that, being able to like just walk back to Blockbuster after I finished watching a movie and getting another one. So I think I watched literally every movie in that Blockbuster Video. But one of the things that I was doing was, is I was able to experiment more, right? Mm-hmm. Because I had seen this Abbott and Costello movie for forever, and then finally I was able to rent it.
Seeing the box art.
The box art, you know, and so I was able to finally like actually get it and watch it. Sure. And I love this fucking movie. Oh God, it just tickles me in ways that, you know, and maybe it just speaks to my sense of humor more, where it's just like, you know what, I don't really like Borat, and I don't write like overly sexual like humor, like sex comedies don't really do it for me, but God damn it, do I like some slapstick nonsense, because this is classic golden age of cinema slapstick buddy comedy nonsense, and I love it.
This to me, I was pleasantly surprised. As I said, I've seen the box art for all of these movies, had them, like I said, in the video store for many years. Never actually sat down and watched one. Never sat down and watched an Abbott and Costello movie. I was pleasantly surprised with how much I enjoy it, much for the same reason. I am a massive Three Stooges fan.
Right.
So right as we open up, Lou Costello's sitting there basically doing Curly. Like, straight up barking like, I'm like, wait a minute, are they just doing Three Stooges shit? Like, then I started getting angry. I'm like, these motherfuckers are just copying the Three Stooges. Those Three Stooges were gods. What are you doing here? And then I calmed myself down, had another cup of coffee and a cigarette. God damn it. Lou, give him a cigarette. Calm down.
Yeah.
Who are you talking to? Oh, that was an Always Sunny reference. Don't worry about me. I'm having... trying to hold it together. Keep 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 it together. But yeah, no, once I got into it, and again, the opening credits really got me, because I didn't know that it was Bela Lugosi and all them, the actual classic actors. So it was awesome. And this movie, it's what you would expect it to be.
Oh,
like you said, golden age of cinema slapstick at its finest.
Yes.
It's wonderful. And again, I'm like, we talked a little bit off air about it, and the shot that got me was when Lou Costello has seen Dracula.
Yep.
He got out of his coffin, and he calls in Abbott. In the movie, they're playing Chick and Wilbur.
Yeah.
So Wilbur calls Chick in, and he's like, he's doing again. I'm just gonna keep calling it doing the Curly thing. You know. You know, that whole,
yeah,
like,
right.
he can't talk because he's so shocked and afraid. And Abbott's there, and he's looking right at Bela Lugosi, who's staring right back at him. And you can see it because it's a giant wide shot of this room.
Right.
And he's like, I don't see anything. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's literally looking at you. You're looking at him. But in the context of the movie, it works. It just works. And again, I'm like, I watched this whole movie going, all right, I understand. Because Quentin Tarantino has gone on record saying that this was one of the movies that he cites as an inspiration for genre blending.
Yeah.
Like that, like as deep as that shit is.
Right.
It's like, you know, when I was thinking about genre blending, I thought about the magnum opus that was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah, right. Well,
shut the fuck up, Quentin.
But he's kind of right, because so.
But what I was going to say is, I understand the Abbott and Costello stuff is funny. Was the monster stuff supposed to be scary?
I so I have to take it with a grain of salt because, like, obviously movies aren't made this way anymore. No. You know what I mean? No. Like, they're made like all other movies. And so, like, the comedy is filmed in that wide genre, whereas, like, there are lighting techniques on Dracula that are specifically horror and...
Right,
like the eyes, you know, the eyes.
Where it's just, everything is shadowed out, and it's Bela Lugosi's eyes mesmerizing, even though they weren't in focus.
Yeah, we can talk about the execution as a different thing, but that's what he's talking about. You know, that's what he's talking about with the genre blending. It's the same thing they talk about when they talk about Citizen Kane being the greatest movie of all time, and it's because prior to that, they just set up a camera and things happened in front of it, you know, and that's still how comedy was done in the '40s, you know, and this was more technically nuanced, I guess would be the answer to your question.
Yes. I was just curious, like, cause even let's take Abbott and Costello out of it for a minute, because like the monster stuff was shot very similar to how they were in their movies. You know, like if you went back and watched Bela Lugosi in Dracula 1931, it was shot very similar to how Dracula was shot in this movie. So I guess what I was trying to figure out, and you won't know unless you talk to somebody who went to the movies in 1948.
Yeah, right. Was it scary?
Was it scary? Like, I understand Dracula, the movie, was supposed to be scary. But was this supposed to be? Because I think it was. I'm not saying that as a shitty thing, because again, I'm me in 2020. I can't look at this and be like, shit, it's scary, because it's not. But was it at the time? Because I like to try to put myself in the mindset of watching the movie, like we did last week. Like Ernest Scared Stupid. It's like, I'm not going to sit there and watch Ernest Scared Stupid with the same eyes I do fucking Hostel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
There are two different types of Halloween-y movies. So
sure.
So you watch it with, you know, for lack of a better term, you watch stuff like Ernest, or you watch stuff like Abbott and Costello with quote unquote softer eyes. You know, you're not trying to poke holes in all this stuff because it's absurd. But I'm curious about, like, these old movies, if that shit was supposed to be scary, or if it was scary for people.
Yeah, I'd have to say
with parents have a problem bringing their kids to this.
I would say it's kind of in the same way that, like, Scooby-Doo is scary. You know what I mean? Like, I would think that it, like, obviously, again, it's the same sort of thing where it's that cartoon was supposed to have spooky elements that were supposed to scare you. Right back in the day. So I would think that, like, yeah, the Dracula stuff, like when they go into the basement and, you know, Wilbur ends up going through the wall and ends up, you know, he ends up in with Dracula and the monster. And it's like, I bet that was supposed to be scary.
Well, and you mentioned the techniques and stuff, and the Wolfman transformation. Looking at it now, obviously, it's just, you know, a bunch of dissolves. But yeah. I had a few questions. But it was shown the same way as that Wolfman movie that was supposed to be scary. Like, the transformation, just because this is a comedy and a slapstick comedy at that, the transformation of the Wolfman didn't change. Like, I'm assuming that was scary in 1948 to people. People going to the movies were like, oh, dang. Like, I can't even... put my head there, but I'm assuming that were like that was spooky scary for them.
Well, yeah, and then like you look at the Wolfman stalking Wilbur through the forest in the latter third of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, that's supposed to be scary on the onset, but then the comedy comes in where he doesn't realize how scary this is supposed to be. You know.
Also, I mean, again, from a technical side, the Wolfman transformation. My assumption is, and I could be completely wrong, but they had to have locked that camera off and just kind of made him up and then put him back in place, shot it, made him up more, put him back in place, shot it, made him up more, put him back, like,
because
it was the layers and stages of makeup that they were dissolving into. It wasn't like it just went from clean skin to Wolfman makeup.
Right.
It was like, here's a little bit of hair, and here's a little bit of hair, and then here's some more, and here's the nose changing.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
he probably didn't even move.
3 days.
Yeah, he probably didn't even move while they were filming that.
They did the makeup as he's laying, because there was one where he was like under wood.
Yes.
And I'm like, God, that poor makeup artist.
Yeah.
And again, this is probably just because I just did prosthetics, and I'm like, oh man, that must have sucked.
Well, it's like prosthetics in any sense is always.
For me, it felt like someone had applied scotch tape to my entire face. That's the best way I can describe it. Like literally, because I was covered. My entire face was prosthetic makeup for the Sasquatch commercial.
If I didn't know it was you, I wouldn't know it was you.
Well, I had somebody on Instagram say, which one are you? And I'm like, the guy talking.
Yeah.
And like, oh, I didn't have volume on. Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Dumb.
You know, the one that, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, right.
But it's basically like having scotch tape all over your face. And I mean, I was in a full hair suit. This guy was just wearing clothes. Like, again, that was another thing. I'm looking at like, he doesn't have a bodysuit on. Good for him. Smart man.
Yeah, smart.
Regular people clothes is much more breathable than hair all over your body.
Yeah. And you were just going to put him in a long sleeve shirt. That way we don't have to do we can just do the hands. It's fine.
We're going to glue a piece of hair to his chest so he can have the open collar and then put gloves on him. And then that's it.
That's it.
Don't rip your shirt. It will show skin.
But
yeah, so we got Lon Chaney Jr. playing the Wolfman. We got Bela Lugosi playing Dracula. We got the other one was Glenn Strange was playing Frankenstein, and basically Boris Karloff, who was famous for playing Frankenstein, didn't want to do it. He had but it seemed like that was a common theme. So Boris Karloff refused to do it, but Universal then paid him to do promotions for the movie.
Okay.
So they went to theaters. They went to a theater in New York and shot promotional stills of Boris Karloff buying a ticket to go see it and kind of admire the poster and stuff like that. So he would take the promotional pay. There they are.
One per episode.
There you go. So he took the promotional paycheck, but he wouldn't actually do the movie. Also, Lou Costello didn't want to make it.
Oh, yeah.
He said that no way I'll do that crap. My little girl could write something better than this. Then they paid him an extra $50,000 and signed his buddy Charles Barton on to direct. And he was like, all right, cool. Let's have some fun.
Yeah.
There you go.
Money talks, baby. Money talks.
Funnily enough, someone who did want to do the movie, but Universal didn't want him, was Bela Lugosi.
Oh, really?
That's I didn't fun. Know until this that this was only the second and the last time that Bela Lugosi played Dracula, because that's who Bela Lugosi is to me.
Yes, right.
To, you know, to someone who didn't grow up then, Bela Lugosi is Dracula, but the only other time, aside from Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, that he played Dracula was
Dracula.
In 1931.
Yeah, that's nuts.
It's crazy, because that's what he was like. Even in that Ed Wood movie that Tim Burton did, it's like it was just as much a Bela Lugosi biopic as it was an Ed Wood biopic.
It's true.
And it's like that was his life was Dracula, you know? So that was kind of interesting that basically, I guess his agent, Hollywood was a wildly different time in this era.
The studio system was a thing. They were all signed to Universal, so they were only in Universal movies.
Right, and I'm trying to find what happened there, but it was basically like Bela Lugosi's agent had to, it's like strong arm a studio head or something like that, to get Lugosi in there. Basically, the long story short, his agent had some bad words with the head of Universal at the time, and basically said that you owe him this. Bela Lugosi, quote unquote, is Dracula. Basically,
yeah, sure.
Fuck you.
It's not wrong.
Like I said, it was his, you know, his life defining character that he played. But outside of that, you know, Hollywood shenanigans, there really wasn't a ton of like trivia and stuff.
No, this was also before they kept track of that stuff.
Right. You know, and this is one of the, I've seen this a bunch. Leonard Maltin has done a bunch of these, but the DVD commentary is like a film historian type of thing.
Okay.
And Leonard Maltin's done a few. Roger Ebert did some before he died. Kevin Smith has done some, like Kevin Smith did a Roadhouse commentary track.
Oh, great.
That exists. This is just completely selfish, but we should we need to figure out how to get in on that sweet DVD commentary money 20 years after the fact. Yeah. Right. 20 years after it was popular. I mean, it's what we do at Christmas every year, basically.
The thing is, what we need to do is we need to
become reputable.
Yeah, well, there's that. We need to have people like
review, subscribe, get the algorithm working for us. We need that sweet commentary money.
No, but we need to have these tracks and figure out an easy way for people to sync them.
Oh, that's fucking simple. I could do that. We do it at Christmas every year.
That's true.
1, 2, 3, play. There you go. Yeah. We're synced up. Well, now we're watching it.
Yeah, right. I mean,
literally. We've been doing it for 3 years now.
It's true. You're right.
We just need to find somebody who has some money to want to sync up with us. We are hireable.
Very, very hireable.
Despite what you hear, we're good guys. but yeah, so there wasn't a ton of trivia surrounding it outside of that brief casting stuff. They hired a guy. This is an interesting one. Bobby Barber was, and I've never heard of this, but maybe it was a thing in the studio times. He was employed for the film as quote unquote a court jester.
Okay.
His job literally on set was to keep the energy level up by pulling practical jokes and deliberately blowing takes. That's a job.
Yeah.
It was a job in 1948.
So
that feels like a turtle in Entourage.
Sure. It feels like the same job that they have where if you ever go and watch a taping of a sitcom.
Sure.
If you ever go watch a taping of a sitcom, and they still have these, but they have comedians that like keep the crowd engaged because as if anybody who actually works in television and film knows that those days are long as hell.
Yep.
And if you are not like into it and you're just like, oh, I want to see them make a movie, you'd realize just how boring it actually is. like the fun is watching the end product. The fun is not the making of it.
Right.
You know? And so.
But yeah, they do that. Sitcoms have them. The late night shows have them.
Yep.
I mean, it's basically like a warm up act, basically.
Yeah.
Like this said, to get everybody's energy levels up. All right, we're going to have some fun today. We're going to tell some jokes. Most of them give away like prizes and stuff like that, play trivia with guests and stuff. There was a short-lived, Pete Holmes had a short-lived HBO show called Crashing.
Sure.
And it was on maybe a year or two ago. And one of the gigs he got as a comedian, a semi-autobiographical look at Pete Holmes. And one of the gigs he got was that. It was warming up for the Rachel Ray show. And it's like, you know, he'll go out and he'll play goofy trivia games with the audience.
Right.
And, you know, throw prizes. You get a T-shirt and you get a T-shirt because Oprah's going to give you a car. So I'll give you a T-shirt. You know, that sort of shit. But this guy was hired for a movie set.
Yeah.
So literally, like, apparently Bela Lugosi was not a fan. Because there was he was doing his scene, and this guy, Bobby Barber, basically was walking behind him, mimicking all his moves until Bella stopped, yelled in his very thick Hungarian accent, "We should not be playing while we are working," and stormed off set for the day.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
You have to be Hungarian.
Yeah.
Remember that Ed Wood movie, doing the Dracula fingers. He's like, how do you do that, Bella? You have to be double jointed and Hungarian. It's like, God damn. Ah, Walter Matt, that was so good in that movie. We should do that fucking movie.
Sure, we can do that movie.
But yeah, and much it's interesting that this was a movie. It was only 120 minutes.
Yeah,
not 120 minutes. I'm sorry, it was an hour and 20 minutes. Yes. So it was an hour and 20 minutes.
So it was, so 90. It was only,
yeah, not like even
88.
Yeah, 82 minutes long, which is really short. And it plays, like I said, there was a lot of parallels between this and Stooges, mostly because that's what I know of this era of slapstick comedy. But it played as that. It played as like a bunch of shorts strung together just with a common theme.
Right. There was a through line, but it was basically just bit to bit to bit.
Right. And I did get confused a couple times because it's black and white. So when you start introducing, especially in the time, multiple female characters that aren't really established,
they all look the same.
I'm like, wait a minute. Who is this one?
Yeah. Because
there was two. There was two prominent women, and until they were both in the same room, you didn't realize that they were two separate women. But they were both in there. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the tough part is if you haven't seen this movie before, realizing that Wilbur's girlfriend is also with Dracula, like, because she,
like, there's another woman, and the problem was that they were both enamored with Wilbur.
Yeah.
So the second woman who comes into this movie also has the hots for Wilbur.
Yeah.
So it's like, wait a minute, was this the other one, or is that that? It's like, oh, that's the blonde. Okay, so that's that. But what does she do? She works for the insurance company.
Yeah.
Well, who she's the fuck is for that one? She's a doctor. What is going on here?
Yeah, she's the insurance investigator, and she's trying to trick them into revealing where Dracula is.
Shockingly, the plot is ludicrous.
Well, the plot is bananas.
It's kind of the same plot as Monster Squad. So basically, it seems like a guy who owns a wax museum, House of Horrors is what it's called.
Yes.
Does he believe that there are live bodies in there?
I don't know whether he...
Or did he order wax bodies and they shipped these? Because Lon Chaney, the Wolfman, knows that it's really Dracula and really Frankenstein's monster in the boxes. One is in a fucking coffin. And I'm curious if this, if the wax museum owner, who's the antagonist in this whole movie, who actually at one point gets mauled by the Wolfman, but he'll be fine.
Yeah, of course he will.
He gets mauled off camera, and I love the line, "Ah, another inch over to the left, and you would have got your jugular vein."
Great.
That's a super delivery. That's lunch, everybody. All right.
Yeah. We're breaking for lunch. Ring the bell.
It wasn't in focus. Doesn't really matter.
Well, see, I believe that the shop owner, the guy that owns the House of Horrors, thinks that he's getting wax statues.
Okay.
Because he's
showing up his bodies, which really confused me.
Yeah, I don't believe that, because nobody thinks that they're real, right? Because Wilbur, for the longest time, is the only person that has seen them active, right?
He's the only one that's seen them, period.
Right. And so everybody else is, you know, Chick opened the casket and there wasn't even a body in there.
Right.
You know, so he never saw that. And then the only time he ever saw Frankenstein was when, or Frankenstein's monster, was when it was chasing them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
also, can we talk about their jobs? They're basically postal workers, but in-office postal workers in Florida. The plot of this movie would be as if you ship a package through the postal service, and then you go to the post office and demand that the postal worker come to your house or business and unpack your shit for you.
Yes. Yeah, that's what happened. That's what happened.
That's a hard no, pal. It's not,
also, in the middle of my job. In the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, they had to go to this place to deliver this package.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It was insane.
It's wonderful.
It's
just wonderful. The ending.
Yes. Well, so before that,
everyone has to die.
Yeah.
Quickly. We only have an hour and 20. Let's fucking everyone go into the water.
Yeah, everybody just go to the water. We're going to light the monster on fire.
Hey, that was a good fire. I mean, watching it closely.
Yeah.
You can see the little mannequin hand.
Yeah.
It's like, it's definitely like a bunch of pieces of wood with a Frankenstein wig on.
Yeah.
It's like the hand was just a right edge square.
Yeah.
But the burn was awesome. Like the fire was really, because especially that shit, like knowing that it's 1948, it's like that was fucking fire. That wasn't like at the end of Devil's Rejects when they're burning up the house and it's all digital fire. It's like, oh yeah, that's clearly they're sitting in a green screen room. No, they burned that bridge down.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was
probably on a set somewhere. And you could see like it's again, I noticed the little shit like that, but it's like immediately it goes up and it's like, wow, that's a lot of smoke in that set.
The craziest the other thing you need to realize too is that none of that is on location.
No, it's in a
building. You know what I mean? Everything that you saw in that movie was built. You know what I mean? It's Universal
soundstage.
Yeah. It's nuts. My favorite, before we get to the actual ending, because I love the actual ending.
All right.
The sign that gets to, that tickles me every single time that shouldn't is they're getting chased by Frankenstein's monster and they run into one room. And they're like, all right, quick, we got to barricade the door. So they push the bed up against it. And they're like, all right, get your shoulder in there. We got to barricade it. And then it's a pull door. So Frankenstein's monster just pulls the door open. And I laugh so hard every time. And it's dumb. It's really dumb. And then it was just like, all right, we got to wrap up this movie. Oh, all right. What's the ending of this movie? I don't know. Let's just put the Invisible Man in, I guess.
Well, come on. That's obviously setting up the sequel, which happened. Abbott and Costello meet the Invisible Man, where that happened 3 years later, 1951. Obviously building the Abbott and Costello Marvel Extended Universe here.
Yep. They also met the Mummy.
They did meet the Mummy. The Mummy was supposed to be in this movie, but when they got to the writing stage, realized that you know they have to keep it under an hour and a half. So step aside, Mummy. You'll get your own movie. That was 1955. They met the Mummy. They did end up doing a movie with Boris Karloff. Karloff was in, of course, God bless him, Abbott and Costello Meet the Killer, Boris Karloff.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of have to be in that one, Boris.
Yeah, you gotta.
You're literally the name of the movie.
Right.
They also did meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It was just Abbott and Costello meeting a lot of creatures and people and stuff.
Yeah.
Killer Boris Karloff. What a weird one.
Oh, man. But it's on Peacock. It's on free Peacock, too. So you can just watch this movie. And I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
With an ad or two for Target.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Is that Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy?
That's not Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy.
I'm sorry. I was reading. Why? God damn it, Mike. Stop reading. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein?
Yes, it's Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
I love it. So this is wrapping up our very brief spooky month of that movie show. And coming up next week, nobody recommended anything, so we got to do that Kevin Sorbo movie. What is it, Eddie?
Yes, Pool Boy Drowning Out the Fury.
Eddie sent me a YouTube video of a trailer to a movie. I watched it and I'm like, oh, that's a cute spoof trailer. And I sent that text to Eddie. I'm like, that's a funny spoof trailer. He goes, no, it's a movie. It's on Amazon Prime. You have Amazon Prime. We're doing it. I'm like, oh, motherfucker. It's not even Christmas. We got to sit through this shit. Yeah. So next week, one more time. What is it again?
Pool
Kevin
Boy.
Sorbo Meets the Mummy.
Pool Boy Drowning Out the Fury.
Starring Kevin Sorbo. I remember Danny Trejo's in it. Yep. Is Jason Mewes in it?
Yes.
Oh my God, we're pulling out the big guns for this one.
Oh, yes. A famous director, St. James, I believe is the
name. Really?
I believe that's the director's name.
I'm surprised it wasn't Alan Smithy. Google it, kids. Anyway, that's coming up next week. Thank you for joining us on That Movie Show. Please follow Eddie and myself on social media at Mike Wendt, at the Eddie McCabe. Hashtag That Movie Show, where you can recommend. We will review anything because we need recommendations. The website, thatmovieshow.net. Please recommend things. Thatmovieshow.net is the website. The Facebook page, facebook.com/thatmovieshowtv. We are on every and all podcast app. So if you listen to podcasts, type in That Movie Show, hit the subscribe, hit the like, hit the, I don't know, whatever the rating system is, give us a thumbs up or a five star or a thing or a thing or a thing.
Whatever the most stars.
Click the bell. We want this algorithm to work for us. It's been 3 years.
Yeah.
All right. And we will see you next week for Pool Boy, Rise of Kevin Sorbo.
Out the Fury.
Bye. That's Groovy Valley, Hooey Hollywood, where any office boy or young mechanic can be a panic.
Enjoy.
Thanks.
The order breakfast at the McDonald's drive-thru. Tell yourself you'll wait to eat it at work, but it smells way too good. So you eat it right there in the McDonald's parking lot meal. There's a meal for every morning at McDonald's.
Right now, get any size iced coffee for 99 cents until 11 a.m. and pair it with your favorite breakfast sandwich or one of our tasty bakery treats. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Does anybody want breakfast? Guys, let's go. I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why did you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
And nothing says morning like a classic sausage McMuffin with egg. Right now, get this all-time favorite for just $2 on the $1-$3 menu. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.